When you have health insurance, it's easy to forget about your out-of-pocket costs. That can be a lot of money. How do you know you're not overpaying? It's estimated that over 50% of medical bills contain errors. HealthLock can help. HealthLock is a technology company that securely connects with your insurance and reviews your claims for overbilling, wrong codes, and even fraud. To date, HealthLock has saved its members over $130 million. To save, visit HealthLock.com. Do it today before you see another healthcare provider. That's HealthLock.com.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
More Than a Movie is back with Season 2. I'm your host, Alex Fumero. And each week, I'm going to talk to the people behind your favorite movies. From The Godfather, Andy Garcia.
He has the smarts of Vito, the temper of Sonny, the warmth of Fredo, and the coldness of Michael.
To the legend behind La Bamba, Lou Diamond Phillips.
When I walked in, I didn't think I had a shot at Richie because John Stamos's picture was already up on the wall.
Listen to More Than a Movie on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Before we start the show, just a reminder to share, like, and subscribe to this podcast wherever you're listening to it. And please, give us a 5-star rating. It helps us beat the big tech algorithm. Also, if you love Red Pilled America, please consider supporting the show. You can buy one of our 100% Made in America products. We have hats, candles, a book. That's right, we wrote a book. Or you can become a Backstage subscriber. Well, you'll have access to our entire archive, and you can hear the behind the scenes of each episode, along with Patrick and I arguing over who's a better storyteller. Or you can just make a donation. To support the show, please visit redpilledamerica.com and click support or shop in the top menu. That's redpilledamerica.com and click support or shop in the top menu. Support what you love or it goes away. Thanks, everyone.
Previously on Red Pilled America.
The 18-year-old that was shot and killed by a Ferguson, Missouri police officer was named Michael Brown.
And once my friend felt that shot, he turned around and he put his hands in the air.
He really was a gentle giant.
Tonight, there is a lot of looting going on.
Hands up, don't shoot! Hands up, don't shoot!
But the problem was that the mantra was a complete lie.
That the facts do not support the filing of criminal charges against Officer Darren Wilson.
The movement moved from hands up, don't shoot, to Black Lives Matter.
The Black Lives Matter movement is everywhere. Where did it come from? And perhaps more importantly, what does it want? I'm Patrick Carelci.
And I'm Adriana Cortez.
And this is Red Pilled America, a storytelling show.
This is not another talk show covering the day's news. We're all about telling stories.
Stories Hollywood doesn't want you to hear.
Stories the media mocks. Stories about everyday Americans that the globalists ignore.
You can think of Red Pilled America as audio documentaries, and we promise only one thing. The truth. Welcome to Red Pilled America. So this is part two of Hands Up, our series of episodes delving into the origin of Black Lives Matter to figure out where it came from and what it wants. You don't need to have heard the last episode to understand this one, but in case you missed it, in part one we looked into how Black Lives Matter first came into national prominence by telling the story of the death of Michael Brown, an 18-year-old black man that was shot and killed by a white Ferguson, Missouri police officer. When word of his death first hit the news, the story that the mainstream media concocted was that Michael Brown was a promising, unarmed gentle giant that was gunned down for no reason by a racist white cop while surrendering with his hands up. It was an unprovoked execution, and locals and leftists took the story and ran with it. Hands up, don't shoot immediately became their mantra, and Fergusonians used it to attack the police, loot stores, burn down local businesses, and more. But there were major problems with the narrative. A few days after riots swept through Ferguson, the police released video of Michael Brown allegedly committing a strong-arm robbery just minutes before his fatal encounter with Ferguson police officer Darren Wilson. An autopsy also showed that Michael Brown was not shot from behind, as several witnesses claimed. He was only shot from the front. When the St. Louis prosecutor released the findings of their investigation, the public learned that the evidence supported Officer Wilson's account of the deadly incident. It was actually Michael Brown that was the aggressor, who tried to take the officer's gun while he was seated in his vehicle. The forensic evidence also suggested that the 18-year-old, 6'5", nearly 300-pound man was likely charging Officer Wilson when he was shot, not holding up his hand saying, "Don't shoot," as the mainstream media portrayed. The evidence and most credible eyewitnesses led to the indisputable conclusion that Officer Wilson was justified in shooting Michael Brown. When the grand jury decided not to indict the Ferguson officer, Michael's stepfather called on the people to burn it down, and they complied. The riots, looting, and burning were worse than the initial mayhem. When the smoke settled, Michael Brown supporters were holding out hope that the Obama Justice Department would charge the officer with a federal crime, but they too came back with the same conclusion. Officer Wilson was justified in shooting Michael Brown. It was at this point that a few of the biggest proponents of the Hands Up Don't Shoot hoax had to admit that it was a lie. But instead of concluding that there was no crisis of police killing unarmed black men, they wouldn't let it go. They shifted their mantra from Hands Up Don't Shoot to Black Lives Matter. And when they did, a new movement was born. Or was it? Cultural movements take years, really decades, to form. Successful ones are almost always repackaged movements of the past, with message tweaks and cultural shifts that make it palatable for the time. Black Lives Matter is no exception. A hint to where Black Lives Matter comes from can be found not only in its racially based Marxist ideology, but also its iconography. The BLM logo is a raised black fist and is an exact cut-and-paste copy of a previous African-American crusade, the Black Power Movement. Understanding this explosive 1960s phenomenon will help uncover a key reason as to why Black Lives Matter spread so quickly across America and what the movement has in mind.
Stokely Carmichael immigrated to the United States in 1952 when he was a boy. And by the mid-1960s, he captured a building rage among young African Americans with a phrase he popularized called Black Power. The mantra incorporated many of the earlier black nationalist ideas of Marcus Garvey and quickly shifted from a rallying call to an explosive new movement that alarmed the older leaders in the civil rights movement, including Martin Luther King Jr. himself. But what's perhaps most surprising about his shift to anti-white activism was that Stokely's childhood doesn't show any signs of the racism that he'd later decry in the most inflammatory of ways.
The major enemy is not your brother, flesh of your flesh, and blood of your blood. The major enemy is the honky and his institutions of racism. That's the major enemy. That is the major enemy.
In his prime, Stokely Carmichael was an extremely charismatic, tall, slender, good-looking Trinidad-born black man who, until his dying day, blamed just about everything bad in his life on white people, even his prostate cancer, of which he died from at the age of 57. The vehemently anti-white civil rights leader claimed his prostate cancer was, quote, "given to me by forces of American imperialism and others who conspired with them," end quote. To Stokely, American imperialism was synonymous with white people, and they were the cornerstone of the evil in the world. Stokely Carmichael was born in 1941 in Port of Spain, Trinidad, a Caribbean island, and lived with his grandmother and aunts until he moved to the United States to be with his parents when he was 11. He grew up in the Bronx in a part of town with very few blacks, yet, according to his mom, he faced no racism. He Here's Stokely's mother reminiscing on her son's childhood in an interview with the Caribbean TV show.
Talk a little bit about when Stokely was growing up, what it was like to be living in the Bronx as a black family.
Well, I'll tell you one thing. We had no problem at all.
Uh-huh.
And he hung out with only Italian boys. It was an Italian neighborhood.
Uh-huh.
And everything was fine. Nobody bothered us.
So it is not correct to say that the experiences growing up in the Bronx neighborhood was what fired that kind of black nationalism in him.
Definitely not.
Stokely was also not raised by his family to think of himself as oppressed.
As a parent, did you talk to Stokely about things like blackness and stuff like that? Was it part of your household to discuss the race relations in the country?
Never.
Mm-hmm.
We thought we were just as good as anyone else.
Yes.
And I brought up my children the same way.
Mm-hmm.
You go out, you look everybody in the face, they say good morning, you say good morning, they don't say good morning, you go your way.
Mm-hmm.
You never look back to say good morning. No. We were just as good as anybody else, and my children were taught that.
Uh-huh.
He was a smart young man who tested well enough to get into Bronx Science, a predominantly Jewish public high school considered one of the best in the area. He was offered admittance at several prestigious mixed-race schools, including Harvard. But in 1960, Stokely chose Howard University, a historically black university in the Washington, D.C. area. It was there where he'd slowly become radicalized. He entered college as a pre-med major, but by the end of his freshman year, he shifted to philosophy and began getting involved with an organization called the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, or popularly known as SNCC, and began joining the Freedom Rides, where he rode with whites on buses to challenge the segregated interstate travel laws of the South. Violent attacks often accompanied these rides, and once they reached their destination, the passengers were arrested and jailed. At the end of one early trip to Mississippi, Stokely was arrested and forced to serve a 49-day sentence in a Mississippi prison. He continued his studies at Howard University, but would travel down to Mississippi every summer to be involved with the Freedom Rides and sit-ins, which was a tactic used to protest segregated lunch counters in the South. It was during these efforts that he met Martin Luther King Jr. in 1963, and a year later he graduated from Howard and moved down to Mississippi to be involved in the civil rights movement full-time. Throughout his efforts, Stokely was becoming dissatisfied with Martin Luther King Jr.'s nonviolent form of protest and began to imagine a more aggressive stance. But it wasn't until the summer of 1966 that he expressed this new belief in an explosive way. On June 5, 1966, activist James Meredith decided to do a solo march from Memphis, Tennessee to Jackson, Mississippi, a distance of over 200 miles, to protest the slow pace of change after the passage of the Civil Rights Act. James had already successfully desegregated the University of Mississippi 4 years earlier. Supporters began joining him on his walk. But on day two, a white man stepped out from a wooded area and shot James with a 16-gauge shotgun loaded with birdshot.
This is the William Bold Hospital, where James Meredith lies wounded. It was here that Negro civil rights leaders from around the country made their pilgrimage to the bedside of the young Negro who was shot down on the highways of Mississippi.
He wasn't severely injured, but he couldn't immediately finish the journey. So civil rights leaders like Martin Luther King Jr. decided to continue the march in Meredith's name.
Yes, this march we are continuing, started by James Meredith, I am convinced will have as great an impact, or probably a greater impact, than the march from Selma to Montgomery.
Stokely Carmichael joined as well, with the plan to radically shift the civil rights movement.
The demonstration is not to be an end unto itself.
When you reach Jackson, what will be your purpose there?
Well, we'll talk about that after we develop.
On June 16, 1966, Stokely put his plan into action. Just released from jail after being arrested for the 27th time, he stepped onto a makeshift stage in Greenwood, Mississippi, to address the gathered marchers.
We have to stop being ashamed of being black. We've got to stop being ashamed of being black.
he decided it was time to introduce a new slogan, one that was designed to radically change the course of the civil rights movement.
We want black power! We want black power!
We want black power. Segments of his speech hit American TV screens, revealing a black American sentiment that was bubbling up all across the country. And it was all part of Stokely's plan. He was later quoted saying to civil rights icon Martin Luther King Jr., quote, "Martin, I deliberately decided to raise this issue on the march in order to give it a national forum and force you to take a stand for black power," end quote. MLK Jr. reportedly responded, quote, "I have been used before. One more time won't hurt." But the Reverend was alarmed by the new posturing and later took to the microphone to give a full-throated rejection of the new approach.
"And I'm disturbed about a strange theory that is circulating, saying to me that I ought to imitate the worst in the white man and the worst in our oppressors. Who has a victory of killing and lynching people and throwing them in rivers? It's our oppressors, and now people are telling me to stoop down to that level. Oh, no!
Oh, no!
The reason that I will not do it is that I'm not going to allow anybody to pull me so low as to use the very method that has perpetuated evil throughout our civilization. I'm sick and tired of violence. I'm tired of the war in Vietnam. I'm tired of war and conflict in the world. I'm tired of shooting. I'm tired of hate. I'm tired of selfishness. I'm tired of evil. I'm not going to use violence, no matter who says it."
But the cat was now out of the bag. Even the civil rights icon's rejection of the concept couldn't calm the impatient black youth that were looking for an immediate change in their neighborhoods. With that simple two-word slogan, black power, Stokely Carmichael triggered black youth all across America to imagine a different way forward, a more in-your-face aggressive approach to getting what they wanted. The idea reached all the way from Greenwood, Mississippi to Oakland, California, a city that was, at the time, experiencing a long decline.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
Like many of us, you might think identity theft will never happen to you. But consider this. There's a new identity theft victim every 3 seconds in the U.S. That's over 15 million people by the end of this year, equal to the populations of New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago combined. Even worse, identity theft victims often don't even know they're victims. That's why LifeLock Identity Theft Protection alerts you to identity threats, even the ones that don't show up on a credit report, like data breaches, fraudulent bank transactions, loan and credit card applications, and crimes committed in your name. If your identity is stolen, your own dedicated LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will work to fix it. LifeLock protects you in ways that you simply can't on your own. Join now and save up to 25% your first year at LifeLock.com/news. That's LifeLock.com/news to save up to 25%. Identity theft protection starts here.
I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty. We're the Armstrong and Getty Show.
We cover the stories the mainstream media ignores.
Stories that are important to your life and important to the world.
The election, of course.
The many trials of Donald Trump.
Couple of wars.
Gender-bending madness.
Why are kids looking at so much social media?
And we bring you the stories the mainstream media is on.
But we do it without the left-wing media spin.
Listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Open your free iHeart app and search the Armstrong and Getty Show to start listening.
Netflix, Hulu, HBO Max, Disney Plus, Apple TV, Amazon Prime, Showtime, Paramount, Paramount Plus, and on. What do these streaming services have in common? They are all storytelling platforms. Which of these platforms are you supporting with your hard-earned money? Now ask yourself if the stories being told on those platforms truly align with your worldview. And if they don't, ask yourself where you go to get entertainment in the form of storytelling that does align with your worldview. Red Pilled America is that show. We are not another talk show covering today's news. We are all about telling stories. 3 years later, we remain the only show of our kind. And why aren't there more shows like ours? Because it's expensive to create this kind of content. That's why we need your support. Without your support, this show doesn't survive. And more importantly, there'll be zero change to the monopolistic environment of storytelling. Please visit redpilledamerica.com and click support in the top menu. Support what you love or it goes away. The choice is yours.
Welcome back to Red Pilled America. Most of the blacks and Hispanics of 1960s Oakland arrived during World War II, when work in defense-related industries like shipyards and factories were abundant. When the war ended, like in many major American cities, the companies that thrived during the conflict either closed or moved to the suburbs, making jobs harder to find in the area. Technological advances and the growth of agribusiness in the 1950s displaced even more workers, and the black and Hispanic people of Oakland, at the time not cultures of entrepreneurship, were faced with fewer and fewer prospects. As a result, unemployment rose, poverty skyrocketed, and crime and violence followed. And this was all happening in the shadow of some of the most affluent neighborhoods in Northern California. So to contain the problem, Oakland's police force adopted a harsh form of policing. In a 1974 interview, a former officer from that era described the style of law enforcement during the 1950s and early 1960s.
In our recruit schools, we inculcated for many years, in my opinion, in our policemen, what I would characterize as a gung-ho law enforcement orientation. We taught them laws of arrest, search and seizure, and patrol procedure practices, which could only result in an officer oriented in a very narrow law enforcement way.
A police officer that joined the force in 1965 agreed.
I think we were a lot more aggressive then. I don't much care for the word harassment. I'd say there was a time we were a head-knocking department, yeah.
So as we went about in this police department as an operational style in the 50s and some part of the 60s, of stopping people on various pretexts, this is a mandate, as it were, from the police department itself. We incurred very, very bad relationships with our community.
What the officer was describing was what we call today profiling. By 1966, whether the strained relationship was the fault of the police department or the people of Oakland is likely much too complicated to place the blame on any one side. But the indisputable fact was that the most vocal segment of Oakland viewed the police as a brutal force. And two neighborhood men, inspired by Malcolm X and the new Black Power movement, looked to change that dynamic. Huey P. Newton, a 24-year-old, handsome black man with a cult leader gift and criminality in his veins, was not only inspired by these ideas. He was also drawn to the oppression-based communist movements of Che Guevara and Mao Zedong, and began to read about these revolutions to see what he could apply to his efforts. The community college student was searching for a way to combat what he saw as the brutality of the Oakland police force and the oppression they imposed on him. That's when he got an idea. Maybe he could arm himself, legally. He began reading about the legality of carrying a loaded firearm in the public, and he found some statutes.
California Penal Code Section 12020 through 12027, and also the Second Amendment of the Constitution guarantees the citizen a right to bear arms on public property.
As long as someone didn't have a felony, they could open carry a loaded firearm in the Oakland area. So Huey teamed up with his community college friend, Bobby Seale, both with a street gang past, to start the Black Panther Party, what they framed as a self-defense organization against police brutality. Huey explained the reason why they chose a Black Panther as their symbol.
We use the Black Panther as our symbol because of the nature of a panther. A panther doesn't strike anyone, but when he's assailed upon, that he'll back up first. But if the aggressor continues, then he'll strike out.
The two decided to recruit local street brothers, as they called them, to join them in carrying firearms while shadowing Oakland police that were patrolling the city. In effect, they wanted to police the police.
Huey Newton and Bobby Seale launched the Black Panther Party for Self-Defense on October 16, 1966, and it was a pivotal time in the Black Power movement.
Now, we are engaged in a psychological struggle in this country.
By the time the Black Panther Party was taking shape, Stokely Carmichael was quickly becoming the godfather of this new militant civil rights movement, and he was invited to speak in Oakland's backyard, UC Berkeley.
And that is whether or not black people will have the right to use the words they want to use without white people giving their sanction to it. And that we maintain, whether they like it or not, we're going to use the word black power and let them address themselves to that. But that we are not going to wait for white people to sanction black power. We're tired waiting. Every time black people move in this country, they're forced to defend their position before they move.
The Black Power movement was honing its argument, and it was one that was targeting white people generally and the police specifically as their primary enemy. They viewed law enforcement as an occupying force that was the source of their misery.
Our own personal position politically is that we don't think the Democratic Party represents the needs of black people. We know it don't. The political parties in this country do not meet the needs of people on a day-to-day basis. The question is, how can you build political institutions that will begin to meet the needs of Oakland, California? And the needs of Oakland, California is not 1,000 policemen with submachine guns. They don't need that. They need that least of all.
Huey Newton and Bobby Seale were eager to meet with Stokely to get a seal of approval for their newly founded organization. When they finally met in early 1967, the founder of the Black Power movement was impressed by Huey and gave the Panthers his blessing. At the time, Stokely Carmichael was the Black Power movement. He was not only a sought-after speaker on college campuses, his anti-American rhetoric gained him international appeal. And in 1967, he began touring the world, including in Castro's Cuba and in Europe. The Black Power movement he was shepherding was looking to take a sharp departure from the nonviolent approach of Martin Luther King Jr., and he wasn't shy in talking about it.
I guess we could start with 1956 for our generation. This was the beginning of the rise of Dr. Martin Luther King. Dr. King's policy was that nonviolence would achieve the gains for black people in the United States. His major assumption was that if you are nonviolent, if you suffer, your opponent will see your suffering and will be moved to change his heart. That's very good. He only made one fallacious assumption. In order for nonviolence to work, your opponent must have a conscience. The United States has none.
Throughout his appearances, Stokely's positions were becoming more and more aggressive, and he began subtly threatening violence if his demands weren't met.
A few words about Martin Luther King's nonviolence movement.
I think Dr. King is a great man, full of compassion. He is full of mercy, and he's very patient. He is a man who could accept the uncivilized behavior of white Americans, their unceasing taunts, and still have in his heart forgiveness. Unfortunately, I am from a younger generation. I am not as patient as Dr. King, nor am I as merciful as Dr. King.
some of Stokely's speeches on college campuses led to riots by his black audience, behavior he welcomed.
They've been telling you that the kids in Nashville started a riot. Number one, you ought to recognize it is not a riot, it is a rebellion. A rebellion. And number two, you ought to be proud of your black brothers and sisters at Fifth, because a honky cop touched one of them and they told him you got to touch all of us.
Stokely's rhetoric about the police was heating up, but it was the Black Panthers that would take these inflammatory words into action.
The police of Oakland were becoming uneasy with the Black Panthers. Huey Newton and his band of militant street brothers were shadowing the Oakland police throughout their patrols. If the officers made a traffic stop, the Panthers would get out of their cars with loaded firearms in clear view, remain at a safe distance from the officers so they wouldn't be arrested for obstruction, and stood there observing the officers. The goal was to intimidate the cops, and they'd often slowly sweep the muzzle of their loaded rifles in a motion that could either be interpreted as just shifting their firearms or pointing it at the officers. Oakland law enforcement became very uneasy with this practice, but the problem was that the Panthers weren't breaking any laws. It was legal in Oakland to carry a loaded firearm in public. So in an attempt to stop the Black Panthers, Oakland police appealed to local lawmakers for some type of legislative relief, and someone bit. On April 5, 1967, Oakland Assemblyman Don Mulford, a Republican, sponsored a California state bill that would prohibit the carrying of loaded firearms in public. He found both Democrats and Republicans to co-sponsor the bill. When the Black Panthers got word that it was making its way through the legislature, they concocted a protest that would catapult them into the national spotlight. 30 Black Panthers, almost all armed, traveled to Sacramento on May 2, 1967 to protest the gun control legislation called the Mulford Act. And on their arrival to the Capitol, the media immediately swarmed them. The co-founder of the Panthers, Bobby Seale, took the opportunity to read a statement.
The Black Panther Party for Self-Defense calls upon the American people in general and the black people in particular to take full note of the racist California legislature, which is now considering legislation aimed at keeping the black people disarmed and powerless at the very same time that racist police agencies throughout the country are intensifying the terror, brutality, murder, and repression of black people.
The Black Panthers then took the bold move of attempting to enter the Capitol building with their firearms. A police officer manning the entrance later recalled his interaction with the gun-toting vigilantes.
I was called down from the upper floors of the Capitol and went to the west entrance of the Capitol, and I saw a group of approximately four male Negroes, all carrying weapons of one sort or another, with a smaller group behind them. I stopped them as they came up the front steps of the Capitol, and I was handed a pamphlet by one of the members of the group. And after reading their pamphlet, I explained to them that they did have a right to bear arms, that as long as they behaved themselves, the state police would protect them, and then they entered the building.
So far, so good. But they didn't know where to go. Reporters shadowing them pointed some of the Panthers to the designated spectator area.
I have these Black Panthers up here with guns on the second floor.
But in the confusion of the moment, some of the Panthers went the wrong way, and instead of going into the spectator area where they were allowed, they entered with loaded weapons onto the chamber floor while it was in session. An attendant at the entrance of the chamber explained what happened.
I was standing by the gate. As a rule, the fellas that come through, if they have a card, we let them in. Otherwise, we don't. But this bunch came just rushing through. No stopping at all. They knocked me away from the gate altogether.
Did it knock you down?
Yes, sir.
And what happened then?
Well, they went on into the chamber.
And that's when trouble started. Officers on the floor were asked to clear them from the room.
Speaker Pro Tem asked me to clear the floor in the rear, and I went to the rear with all the cameramen were there from the news media and told the people to leave. They had no right to be in there, and they indicated their constitutional right was being violated. And under our rules and regulations of the assembly, you're only permitted in the downstairs part of the assembly with a guest pass from a member, which they did not have.
I understand they were removed from the chamber. Did you do this alone, or how many men helped you?
Well, there was a couple of my men and one of the state policemen.
Wait a minute. Am I under arrest? Take your hands off me if I'm not under arrest.
Am I under arrest?
I'm telling you to take your hands off me. I'm telling you, take.
If I'm under arrest, I'll come.
If I'm not, don't put your hands on me.
Is this the way the racist government works? Don't let a man exercise his constitutional rights?
Although it was legal to enter the building and the spectator area with a loaded firearm, no one without a guest pass was allowed to enter the chamber, as an assemblyman later explained.
As you know, they are now being booked under Section 9051 of the government code. Evidently, the district attorney here in Sacramento states that they violated the law by entering the chambers while the assembly was in session.
The Panthers that entered the chamber floor were eventually arrested. The founder of the vigilante group, Huey Newton, complained to the gathered press.
The people in this court and the people in the legislature have not been acting like human beings. They put trumped-up charges of conspiracy and felonies on everyone who went in to exercise a constitutional right and said they had no right to bear arms in a public place. And the legislature, I talked to Morford last night, and he said the legislature has made certain rules that are superior to the United States Constitution and also superior to the statutory law of California, and that is that they made a rule that no one could walk on their property with a weapon. I'm saying this is a bold contradiction.
In the end, their protests backfired. Both houses were controlled by the Democrats, but the bill had bipartisan backing, as well as some surprising supporters. The NRA backed the Mulford Act, and perhaps more surprisingly, the gun control bill had the full endorsement of a conservative icon.
Well, I think it's a ridiculous way to try and solve the problems that have to be solved among people of goodwill, and there's certainly nothing that can be done in the line of goodwill when Americans have guns with even the implied idea that those guns might be directed against other Americans. But I would think that some of the bills that have been suggested, such as not carrying a loaded weapon on a city street or in town, this might certainly be a good one. There is absolutely no reason why out on the street today a civilian should be carrying a loaded weapon.
The bill passed on July 26, 1967, and was signed into law days later by Ronald Reagan. Today, California gun control can be traced back to this moment, and boy did it have very strange bedfellows.
The Black Panthers may have lost the battle to open carry in California, but they struck a gold mine in national publicity. The media loved the story.
They're heavily armed. Whether their weapons are loaded or not, nobody seems to know.
The state assembly was in the midst of a heated debate when the young Negroes, armed with loaded rifles, shotguns, and pistols, marched into the Capitol.
These people feel that the black people have been enslaved throughout most of their lives, that the white society is responsible for this, and then they go on to say, the Black Panther Party for Self-Defense believes that the time has come for black people to arm themselves against this terror before it is too late. And the pending Mulford Act brings the hour of doom one step nearer.
The media called their protest the invasion of the Capitol, and the stunt landed the Black Panthers on every newspaper and TV channel in the nation. It was the national coming out party for the black leather jacket wearing militants. The black youth wanted to be down with the new urban vigilantes. Their office was inundated with calls from every major city wanting to open a chapter. Other metropolitan areas were facing some of the same issues as Oakland. With industries moving, giving rise to joblessness, poverty, crime, and the heavy policing that followed these conditions, the Black Power movement found a foil for their problems, the police, and they adopted a derogatory nickname for them. They called them pigs, and they developed inflammatory chants about their enemy.
No more pigs in our community!
No more pigs in our community. Off the pigs. In essence, the Black Panthers wanted to defund the police or kill them. The ambiguity in their chant was intentional. It was a veiled threat. Get out of our hood or else. And as time passed, their threats would grow even bolder. The media loved the narrative and visual of leather-clad black vigilantes with big afros and militant rhetoric, taking on American law enforcement. They romanticized members of the Black Power movement on magazine covers, and their style and Marxist rhetoric sold newspapers. Overnight, the Black Panthers, the most controversial within the Black Power movement, became a phenomenon and the organization grew fast. Too fast. The incendiary rhetoric of the Black Power movement was a membership windfall for the Panthers. Inflammatory statements drove media coverage and grew the ranks, but it was a double-edged sword. With new members adding daily and chapters quickly opening up all across the nation, there was no vetting process. And of course, with their militant posturing, the group attracted an element that mirrored the troubled days of their founders. Criminals and hoodlums peppered the organization like gasoline doused on dry firewood. The group just needed a match to start a raging blaze. And just 6 months after their stunt in Sacramento, the temperature rose exponentially.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty. We're the Armstrong and Getty Show.
We cover the stories the mainstream media ignores.
Stories that are important to your life and important to the world.
The election, of course.
The many trials of Donald Trump.
Couple of wars.
Gender-bending madness.
Why are kids looking at so much social media?
And we bring you the stories the mainstream media is on.
But we do it without the left-wing media spin.
Listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Open your free iHeart app and search the Armstrong and Getty Show to start listening.
More Than a Movie is back with season 2 of the award-winning film podcast, and this time with a lot more movies. I'm your host, Alex Fumero, and each week I'm going to talk to the people behind some of my favorite movies. From The Godfather, Andy Garcia.
He has the smarts of Vito, the temper of Sonny, the warmth of Fredo, and the coldness of Michael.
To the OG spy kid, Alexa Penavega.
You had Carlo Gugino, who's the coolest mom ever. You had Antonio, who's handsome, amazing, charismatic. And then Carmen and Juni. I felt like a lot of other kids felt like this could be me.
To the legend behind La Bamba, Lou Diamond Phillips.
When I walked in, I didn't think I had a shot at Richie because John Stamos's picture was already up on the wall.
Every episode will feature interviews with the biggest actors, directors, writers, and producers behind your favorite films and tap into the history of Latinos in film. Listen to More Than a Movie as part of the My Cultura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you ever wanted to hear yourself on Red Pilled America, here's your chance. We're wondering, what's your favorite episode? Email us a short voice memo with your favorite story along with why, and you may hear yourself on the show. Email your voice memo to info@redpilledamerica.com. That's info@redpilledamerica.com. Can't wait to hear which ones you pick. Welcome back. So the Black Power movement was growing like an uncontrollable wildfire, and the temperature was about to get even hotter. On October 28, 1967, less than 6 months after the daring protest at the state capitol, Huey Newton was pulled over by police. A confrontation ensued, and the cop that pulled him over, Officer John Frey, was shot and killed.
Newton was in the news again, this time for an early morning shootout with an Oakland policeman who'd stopped Newton and a friend on a traffic check. The policeman died, Newton was wounded, and charged with murder.
With most of the Black Panther leadership now behind bars, the group had to turn to the only spokesman they had left, Eldridge Cleaver, to issue a statement. But Eldridge was also one of the organization's most militant personalities, and his statement raised the rhetoric to an entirely new level.
The Black Panther Party demands that Huey P. Newton be set free.
And we wish to make it very clear that if he is not set free, there is little hope of avoiding open armed war in the streets of California and sweeping across this nation.
If the Black Panthers ever had a legitimate argument for existence, its response to Huey Newton's arrest put an end to their legitimacy. Threatening open warfare on the streets of America was a bridge too far, but they were just getting started.
We are here to give praise to a man who symbolizes much of what has been happening over the past 7 or 8 years, and the mere fact that he is in prison today signifies that the Black liberation struggle rose to a new tide of resistance in 1967.
The Black Panthers started a Free Huey campaign to rally the troops behind their spiritual leader. And on his birthday, they held a rally inviting some of the leaders of the Black Power movement to speak, including the founder of the movement, Stokey Carmichael, and his colleague, H. Rapp Brown. And the two upped the ante.
The only politics in this country that's relevant to Black people today is the politics of revolution.
H. Rapp Brown spoke first.
The only thing that's going to free Huey is gunpowder. Black powder.
How many white folks you killed today? And in ending, I want to end in the Swahili saying, it says, Lasima Tusinda Bila Shaka, Bila Shaka, which means we shall conquer without a doubt. Black power.
H. Rapp Brown would later be convicted of killing a Black cop. He began serving a life sentence in 2002. The godfather of the Black Power movement, Stokely Carmichael, took to the microphone. He was given the honorary title of Prime Minister of the Black Panthers.
The birth of this nation was conceived in the genocide of the red man. Genocide of the red man. Of the red man. In order for this country to come about, the honky had to completely exterminate the red man, and he did it. And he did it. He did it. If you do not think he's capable of committing genocide against us, check out what he's doing to our brothers in Vietnam. Check out what he's doing in Vietnam. Our slogan will become, first, our people, then, and only then, me and you as individuals. Our people first. Our people first. Many of our people's minds have been whitewashed. If a Negro comes up to you and you turn your back on him, he's got to run to the honky. We're going to take time and patience with our people because they're ours. They're ours. All of the Uncle Toms, we're going to sit down and we're going to talk. And when they slap, we're going to bow. And when they slap, we're going to bow. And we're going to try to bring them home. And if they don't come home, we're going to off them. That's all. We have to recognize who our major enemy is. The major enemy is not your brother, flesh of your flesh, and blood of your blood. The major enemy is the honky and his institutions of racism. That's the major enemy. That is the major enemy. A lot of people in the bourgeoisie tell me they don't like Rapp Brown when he says I'm going to burn the country down. But every time Rapp Brown says I'm going to burn the country down, they get a poverty program.
The stage was set for a war between the Black Power movement and the police. And that war was triggered on April 4th, 1968.
Good evening. Dr. Martin Luther King, the apostle of nonviolence in the civil rights movement, has been shot to death in Memphis, Tennessee. Police have issued an all-points bulletin for a well-dressed young white man seen running from the scene. Officers also reportedly chased and fired on a radio-equipped car containing two white men. Dr. King was standing on the balcony of a second-floor hotel room tonight when, according to a companion, a shot was fired from across the street. In the friend's words, the bullet exploded in his face. Police, who have been keeping a close watch over the Nobel Peace Prize winner because of Memphis' turbulent racial situation, were on the scene almost immediately. They rushed the 39-year-old Negro leader to a hospital where he died of a bullet wound in the neck. In a nationwide television address, President Johnson expressed the nation's shock.
America is shocked and saddened by the brutal slaying tonight of Dr. Martin Luther King. I ask every citizen to reject the blind violence that has struck Dr. King, who lived by nonviolence.
Dr. King had returned to Memphis only yesterday, determined to prove that he could lead a peaceful mass march in support of striking sanitation workers, most of whom are Negroes. Dr. King had this to say last night about the situation in Memphis.
Well, I don't know what will happen now. We've got some difficult days ahead. But it really doesn't matter with me now, because I've been to the mountaintop. I don't mind. Like anybody, I would like to live a long life. Longevity has its place. But I'm not concerned about that now. I just want to do God's will. And he's allowed me to go up to the mountain. And I've looked over and I've seen the promised land. I may not get there with you, but I want you to know tonight that we as a people will get to the promised land. So I'm happy tonight. I'm not worried about anything. I'm not fearing any man. Mine eyes have seen the glory of the coming of the Lord.
Washington, Chicago, Detroit, Boston, New York. These are just a few of the cities in which the Negro anguish over Dr. King's murder, presumably by a white man, expressed itself in violent destruction.
The following day, Stokely Carmichael issued a warning to white America and a call to arms to the Black Power movement.
When white America killed Dr. King last night, she opened the eyes for every black man in this country. When white America got rid of Marcus Garvey, she did it and she said he was an extremist. He was crazy. When they got rid of Brother Malcolm X, they said he was preaching hate. He deserved what he got. But when they got rid of Brother Martin Luther King, they had absolutely no reason to do so. He was the one man in our race who was trying to teach our people to have love, compassion, and mercy for what white people had done. When white America killed Dr. King last night, she declared war on us. There will be no crying, there will be no funerals. The rebellions that have been occurring around the cities of this country is just light stuff to what is about to happen. We have to retaliate for the death of our leaders. The execution of those deaths will not be in the courtrooms. They're going to be in the streets of the United States of America. When white America killed Dr. King last night, she made a whole lot easier for a whole lot of black people today. There no longer needs to be intellectual discussions. Black people know that they have to get guns. White America will live to cry that she killed Dr. King last night.
But Stokely Carmichael was spreading lies to inflame black Americans. White America did not get rid of black nationalist Marcus Garvey. He was in fact rejected by black Americans. White America did not kill Malcolm X. He was killed by black members of the Nation of Islam. And white America did not kill Martin Luther King Jr. A single deranged white man did. Black Panther Eldridge Cleaver, one of the most militant of the older members, decided that the Panthers needed to respond to the death of Martin Luther King Jr., or the organization would lose its credibility within the Black Power movement. So he decided to ambush and kill Oakland police officers. Eldridge tried to persuade some of the elder Panther members, but they refused, seeing it as a suicide mission. But some younger members, including 17-year-old Bobby Hutton, were game. 2 days after King's killing, a carload of Panthers discarded their self-defense moniker and went out looking to murder some pigs. A shootout erupted between the Black Panthers and Oakland police.
The Oakland police stated that they were fired upon during a routine investigation of a suspicious person, and after a short search, cornered Hutton and Eldridge Cleaver in the basement of a nearby house.
The gunfire exchange started a fire in the house, forcing the Panthers to either evacuate the building or be burned alive. So they made the decision to come out. and what happened next would create the model for future conflict between the black community and the police. After exiting the house, Bobby Hutton was shot by police and killed. Eldridge and the rest exited as well and were taken into custody. The Black Panthers immediately claimed that Bobby Hutton was executed while giving up. The Oakland police chief at the time stated their claims were ridiculous and looked to correct the record.
We find that as the police brought Robert Hutton to the front of the house, he broke and ran. We find he did not heed commands to halt, and that a single volley of shots from several officers hit Robert Hutton, causing his death. We find that the police conduct in the death of Robert Hutton was lawful. The Black Panther Party poses a real threat to the peace and tranquility of the city of Oakland. Calling the police murderers, calling them fascist pigs, and demanding that the police do not protect and police the minority community is ridiculous on its face. It is both ridiculous and it is irrational. The Black Panther Party has no practical, implementable programs, to my knowledge. And it's about time that all reasonable persons in the city of Oakland, both black and white, recognize the Black Panther Party for what it is and let them know that the people in this city are not going to tolerate their unlawful activities and their irrationality. This must be done if we are going to have peace in this city.
But the Black Power movement continued with the narrative that Bobby Hutton, a young black man with all the promise in the world, was gunned down like an animal by racist white cops while surrendering with his hands up.
Bobby Hutton came out with his hands in the air. First member who walked out of the house and was gunned down.
At least that's what they were saying publicly. Audio of a phone call was released years later of Black Panther founder Huey Newton blaming Eldridge for the death of Bobby Hutton. Nevertheless, publicly, the Panthers kept to their story.
On April 6th, members of the Black Panther Party were ambushed by the Oakland Pigs. And when Little Body was killed, he came out the house with his arms up. Pigs told him to run to the car, and they shot him down. Little Bobby is only one example. He represents all the other black men and women who have been murdered and killed throughout history for the last 400 years.
Bobby Hutton was the original Hands Up, Don't Shoot. A powerful meme was born. One that would be used by Black Lives Matter almost 50 years later. Just like the BLM movement did with Michael Brown, the Black Power movement positioned Bobby Hutton as a victim of racist cops, shot like an animal while surrendering with his hands up. And also like Michael Brown, the Black Power movement martyred Bobby Hutton.
Services for Bobby Hutton, who was shot and killed last Saturday night by Oakland police, were held here at the Euphrasian Church of God in Christ this morning.
Shot down like a common animal, he died a warrior for black liberation.
Their messaging was so effective that actor Marlon Brando felt compelled to speak at a rally for Bobby Hutton immediately following the funeral.
We just came from Bobby Hutton's funeral. And I'm not going to stand up here and make a speech because white people, you've been listening to white people for 400 years. They said they were going to do something. They haven't done a thing as far as I'm concerned. In re-enfranchising the black man, it's up to the individual to do something, to force the government to give the black man a decent place to live, a decent place to bring his children up in. That could have been my son lying there, and I'm going to do as much as I can. I'm going to start right now to inform white people of what they don't know. The Reverend said, the white man can't cool it because he's never dug it. And I'm here to try to dig it. Because I myself as a white man have got a long way to go and a lot to learn. I haven't been in your place. I haven't suffered the way you've suffered. I'm just beginning to learn the nature of that experience. And somehow that has to be translated to the white community now. Time's running out for everybody.
Bobby Hutton became an important part of militant black American history, a history that every black activist today knows. His death created the first prototype for how to use the killing of a black man at the hands of a police officer. Hutton, someone that tried to murder random cops, was deified by the Black Power movement. A monument to him still stands today on public property. At the right moment, with a shift in American culture, this model would be used to great effect. By the time of Bobby Hutton's death, the Black Power movement was already on the radar of FBI Director J. Edgar Hoover, who saw them as the number one threat within America. In 1969, the FBI began covertly and systematically targeting its power hubs through an initiative that they dubbed the Counterintelligence Program, or COINTELPRO for short. They drove a wedge between Black Power movement founder Stokely Carmichael and the leadership of the Black Panthers by seeding distrust through anonymous letters. Before they were done, the Black Panthers suggested Stokely was a CIA agent. As a result, Stokely fled America and planted roots in the West African country of Guinea. The FBI also worked with local law enforcement to infiltrate Black Panther branch offices, and one by one began jailing or killing its leaders.
A New York grand jury has indicted 21 alleged Black Panthers on charges of plotting several bombings in the city tomorrow.
In Chicago, when Black Panthers ambushed and killed two cops, the FBI worked with local law enforcement to take down the leader of the Chicago branch.
Good afternoon. The 20-year-old chairman of the Illinois Black Panther Party, Fred Hampton, was shot and killed in a pre-dawn shootout with state's attorney's police in his West Side apartment. Another party member, 22-year-old Mark Clark of Peoria, also died in the shootout.
And in Los Angeles, the FBI worked with America's first SWAT unit to crush its LA branch. A raid on its headquarters led to a four-hour shootout.
The sounds of early morning of this particular morning in a black section of Los Angeles. A shootout at the headquarters of the Black Panther Party. Hundreds of police moved into the area, sealing it off, ordering a school closed for the day, advising businessmen not to open at all. It began when officers armed with warrants went to the headquarters before dawn to search for weapons. They were met with gunfire. Three policemen were cut down. All are now listed in satisfactory condition. Despite repeated bullhorn orders to surrender, the eight men and three women inside held out for more than 4 hours. Then, one by one, they did surrender. Three had been wounded, two men and a woman. The police say they've had a series of incidents involving the Panthers recently, the latest a few nights ago, when an officer was ordered out of the Panther headquarters at gunpoint. And so, last night, after notifying the FBI and Governor Ronald Reagan, the officers went out with search warrants, looking for a machine gun believed to be owned by one of the Panthers.
By 1970, the Black Panthers were largely neutralized. And over the next few years, they gradually disbanded. The Black Power movement really only lasted for about 4 years, but its monumental impact was undeniable. Pick up the guns and put the pigs on the run, sung by African-American children at the time. The Black Power movement successfully planted a seed within the minds of America's black youth. The sources of their misery was the white man and the police. And one LAPD officer learned the success of that indoctrination firsthand.
I was a sergeant patrolling in the project, and there was a cutest little girl. So I stopped to say hello, and I said, "Hi, honey, how are you doing today?" And she looked at me and she said, "Fuck you, pig." And I thought, we have lost it, man. We have flat lost it.
This idea has survived through the generations. So why did it take Black Lives Matter roughly 40 years to rise from the ashes of the Black Power movement? We'll answer that question in the next episode of Red Pilled America.
Red Pilled America is an iHeartRadio original podcast. It's produced by me, Adriana Cortez, and Patrick Carelci for Inform Ventures. Now, our entire archive of episodes is only available to our Backstage subscribers. To subscribe, visit redpilledamerica.com and click support at the top of the menu. That's redpilledamerica.com and click support at the top of the menu. Thanks for listening.
More Than a Movie is back with Season 2. I'm your host, Alex Fumero. And each week, I'm going to talk to the people behind your favorite movies. From The Godfather, Andy Garcia.
He has the smarts of Vito, the temper of Sonny, the warmth of Fredo, and the coldness of Michael.
To the legend behind La Bamba, Lou Diamond Phillips.
When I walked in, I didn't think I had a shot at Richie because John Stamos's picture was already up on the wall.
Listen to More Than a Movie on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty. We're the Armstrong and Getty Show.
We cover the stories the mainstream media ignores.
Stories that are important to your life and important to the world.
The election, of course.
The many trials of Donald Trump.
Couple of wars.
Gender-bending madness.
Why are kids looking at so much social media?
And we bring you the stories the mainstream media is on.
But we do it without the left-wing media spin.
Listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Open your free iHeart app and search the Armstrong and Getty Show to start listening.
Hey, this is Justin Richmond, host of the Broken Record Podcast. Join me, along with co-host Leah Rose, as we sit down with the artists you love to get unparalleled creative insight. You'll hear revealing interviews with some of the most legendary figures in music, like Paul Simon, Usher, Pete Townsend, Damon Albarn of the Gorillaz, and Missy Elliott. And you'll hear from up-and-comers, like jazz artist Leve, who told me about her fast rise to fame during the pandemic. Listen to Broken Record on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.